My name is Les White, and I am not a member of the governing committee, so you might be wondering, what am I doing up here? I am president of the Free State Homebrewers Club Guild. We are an umbrella organization of 14 clubs in Maryland. A few of you may recognize me from the 2005 conference in Baltimore. And so I asked to introduce John because he's a good friend, and wanted to get a proper welcoming here to the stage. And John Gasparin has been in the timber products industry for over a decade. He's traveled the world in search of unique wood species. And while you may not know his name very well, you're probably very familiar with one of his first alternative wood and beer collaborations, and that would be the Palo Santo Moran from Dogfish Head. I've also had the pleasure of working with John and Heavy Seas on their Plank series. John will talk a little bit about that later. And just as a home brewer, John has given me wood several times. You dirty minds, to flavor beer with. Okay, there will be lots of wood jokes today, and you are encouraged to laugh. Fill in the punchline. So with the exception of oak, the use of wood as a flavoring in alcoholic beverages has been relatively unexplored. But John has really focused on it academically. He's worked with pro brewers, organic chemists, conducted some deep historical research, and really amassed quite a knowledge on this topic. So today you're going to get pretty much a crash course in wood anatomy, wood treatments, and in aging. So please, a round of applause for John Gasparin.
Hello. I was just starting my timer. My name is John. As Les mentioned, I've been working in this industry for a while, and the first opportunity to cross two passions of beer and wood was kind of an accident. I know how to brew, but I don't consider myself a brewer. I consider myself expert in my area, and I rely heavily on the people that are really good at putting together recipes to turn some of these concepts into something amazing. I recognize my own limitations. But I do need to thank Les. You know, starting many, many years ago, I realized that if I wanted to get good at what I do, I need to get a better technical appreciation for the brewing process. And Les has been quite a help in educating me along the way. He runs a BJCP course in the Baltimore area that I would recommend to anybody. That being said, we're here to talk about alternative wood aging techniques. And let's get on with it. We're going to start off, we're going to talk a little bit about some history. We're going to go into some things that you may not have heard of before with regards to wood being used as an adjunct to beer. And then we're going to get into some technical stuff. And we're going to wrap that up with a little bit of safety, which is always important. So, wood, primitive man created the first wooden tools in the Paleolithic era. Over the next million years, man learned how to use wood as a basic fuel, how to use it for medicine, and how to use it for a variety of materials, such as manufactured furniture, construction materials, paper, and weapons. Yet 1 million years is not enough for man to realize the full potential of the world's most versatile natural resource. At the turn of the century, we witnessed a number of wood-based energy developments. Combustible fuels, liquid oils. Even in 2009, Italian scientists created artificial bone made out of wood to speed the healing of live bones after a break. And that little white thing there is indeed artificial bone held between the thumb and forefinger of an Italian. But we're not here to talk about technological advancements or medical breakthroughs. We're here to talk about two global commodities that transcend social classes, that being wood and beer. And yes, the wood jokes are endless. I had wood in my pocket the entire time Les was giving his opening speech. So let's get into the specific history of wood with beer. Wood has been used always in the production of beer. Effectively, wooden stirring sticks and containers have been used for millennia. Wooden barrels came into service around the first century BC. The thing is that the brewers that were brewing beer-like and beer beverages, they were constantly struggling with this thing called spoilage, and they quickly learned that there was a correlation between wood and their spoiled beer product. So many of these brewers, particularly in the country of Belgium, embraced these beer spoilage microorganisms. And they produced a line of beers that we now know today, tart, wheat-based, and barley-based ales, known as lambics, gooses, Flemish reds, and Flemish browns. Other brewers detested the flavors that microorganisms contributed to their beer, so they took every step they could to eradicate microorganisms from their brewing process. The English would steam their casks. They would also use a quicklime solution, which is a caustic. Thank you so much. Not too bad. They would use a quicklime solution, which was a caustic, to try to clean out and sanitize their cask. The Germans would pitch their casks. This is the story we all know, right? Do we all tend to believe that our ancient brewers did not like wood in their beer and they never really used it other than for form and function? It was probably to the late 1900s that we started using it as an adjunct. I disagree with that. I've pulled together five tales, if you will, from history to kind of illustrate that that wasn't entirely true. I'm going to spin you five tales, and the first tale is a tale about quassia wood. This is the quassia tree. It's from South America, and it's a very small tree. And this tale starts in the year 1756. There's an adventurer named Rolander, and he heads over to the country of Suriname, which is on the northeast coast of South America. And while he's there, he meets this guy. His name is Graman Quassi. Graman Quassi was known for having near magical powers because he would use parts of this tree to cure malignant fevers, and people would pay him to cure their family members. The thing is that Graman Quassi was born a slave, and he earned enough money working with this wood to buy his own freedom. Rolander comes back to continental Europe, and he starts telling the world about it. He brings back a heap of the wood with him. And it's not long before this guy, Carl Linnaeus, hears about it. Does anybody here know who Carl Linnaeus is? Yeah, he's the grandfather of modern taxonomy. He invented that whole thing of let's name things by genus and species. And one of the first species that he names is this. He writes a whole dissertation on this tree. He names it Quassia amara in honor of this slave because he's just as enamored with the backstory as the properties of the tree itself. Amara means bitter in Latin, and quassia wood is indeed bitter. It contains the most bitter substance found in nature. It's 50 times more bitter than quinine. And it's not long before brewers realize that quassia wood can go a long way in their beer. A little bit of quassia wood can help balance out that sweetness of their malt rather than a lot of this stuff. So some of these brewers, particularly in England, start cutting corners. And what happens is the brewers that cut corners, their beer starts to spoil very fast because that does not equal that. The stuff on the right has preservative qualities. The stuff on the left does not. And for this reason, quassia wood in the late 1700s was banned in England in beer production. Now, this is one of the most well-documented examples of beer being used as an adjunct for flavor in beer, going back to the 1700s. I was surprised when I found this. I don't know if you guys find this interesting at all. You could think it's all dumb. I don't know. But that's just one of five examples that I've pulled out. Here's another. The year is 1630, and we're in colonial Massachusetts. And one of the very first poems that is published in America has a passage in it that says, "If barley be wanting to make into malt, we must be contented and think it no fault. For we can make liquor and sweeten our lips of pumpkins and parsnips and walnut tree chips." You might argue with me what part of the tree were they using, but I think we can agree this part of the poem is talking about beer, and they're talking about using parts of the walnut tree, and I think they're probably using it either for flavor, mouthfeel, or aroma. Early colonists also used sassafras. The image is on the left. We have sassafras roots there. They would boil those roots with molasses, and then they would ferment it out to a low-alcohol root beer, the predecessor to the soft drink that we know and love today. I'm going to put a pause button on the presentation here. In 1976, the Food and Drug Administration did a study where they found that the essential oil in sassafras caused cancer in rats. So in 76, the FDA banned the use of sassafras or anything containing safrole from food and beverage. So unless you want a lump on your liver, I don't suggest experimenting with the sassafras at home. Spruce beer. You guys probably have heard about spruce beer. If you were at the Founding Fathers presentation earlier, you might have heard it mentioned. This was popularized not just in colonial America, but in Britain and New Zealand throughout the late 1700s. And similarly, that was a mixture of spruce tips, ginger, molasses, and hops that was often fermented out to a low alcohol level. The last story that we'll get into here is somewhat contentious. If you went to the Founding Fathers presentation, you heard a little about this today. But there are some people that credit a guy named Ralph Harwood with creating a beer. Okay, that's not Ralph Harwood. That's some other guy. But essentially, as this story goes, you might have heard it a little earlier, Ralph Harwood is credited by some with inventing a beer called Entire or Entire Butt. The story goes that Ralph Harwood saw behind the bar three different beers that were mixed by the bartender and served into one vessel to the patron, and Ralph Harwood decides that he wants to create a similar beer but served out of a single cask. So whether you believe Ralph Harwood invented Entire Butt or not, fact of the matter is that Harwood did produce beer, and the beer that he did produce did sell for a period of time. And this guy, he turned out to be one of the biggest brewers in England at the time. This guy liked what Harwood did. So as any good businessman would do, Henry Thrail decided he would do a little bit of recon, drink a bit of Harwood's product, and he writes that he perceived a smell of oak in Harwood's porter. So Henry Thrail immediately goes out and commissions the construction of massive unlined oaken vessels for him to produce his entire butt in. And lo and behold, Henry Thrail's entire butt, which later became known as porter, becomes very, very popular. And ultimately, it's not just popular within England, but outside of England. The Empress of Russia asks for it to be exported to her court, and he realizes that it won't make the journey in its current form. He needs to up the alcohol content and the hops in order for it to make it over there without spoiling, thereby creating one of the first Russian imperial stouts. And somewhere within that story lies the use of oak as an adjunct to that beer. These five stories regarding quassia, spruce, sassafras, walnut, and oak, these were exceptions. The general sentiment historically was that these folks did not like the flavor, or aroma of wood in their beer. But it does prove that it wasn't an absolute. Okay? Over the next several centuries, and as we get into the 1900s, what happens is wooden brewing equipment starts to get replaced with metal counterparts, and wood almost starts to disappear from the brewing process. That is until the 1990s, when a few pioneering brewers started to change the course of history for wooden beer once again. In 1994, the first commercial product in the beer industry to be released using a second-use barrel is Bourbon County Stout, and that's produced by Goose Island. We all know and we love this beer. Since then, there have been many, many other commercially released second-use barrel projects. I call these modern barrel-aged beers. In 1995, Dogfish Head, I won't say that they were the first, but they were certainly one of the first to release a beer that was aged on oak chips. Their Immort Ale in 1995 used oak chips specifically as an adjunct to augment flavor, aroma, and mouthfeel in that beer. And I called this an example of modern wood-aged beer. This is what I'm interested in, and this is what I'm focused on. Thing is that through the 90s and into the 2000s, both beer, wine, spirits, everybody that was putting wood into their beverage, they were really focused on oak. And this was a function of availability more than anything else. For reasons that we won't get into right now, the wine and spirits industries really circled around oak 100 years ago, and they really started focusing on that. Now the coopers that were making barrels, if a beer maker wanted to get his hands on a barrel, odds are he could only find an oak barrel. And if a brewer wanted to get his hands on oak chips, when he went to that wine distributor, he wasn't finding a plethora of species to choose from. He was finding oak, or her. I'm sorry, I don't want to be sexist here. So for a while there, as wood-aged beers were coming out onto the market, you were predominantly seeing beers aged on oak, and that was until the year 2006, when somebody with a big pair of balls decided to invest a lot of money into a project. And in 2006, Dogfish Head released Palo Santo Marone, which was aged on an exotic species of wood from South America. And Palo Santo, straight up, no thermal treatment, no nothing, added an entirely new level of complexity to what would otherwise have been just a normal base beer. It added flavor, aroma, and mouthfeel. And in 2009, Cigar City Brewery put out their High Lie IPA under their Humidor series banner. This was aged on Spanish cedar. This is the same wood that's used to line the boxes that hold cigars. And again, it's a very powerful wood. It really augments the flavor, aroma, and mouthfeel of the beer. And yet again, in 2011, Heavy Seas released a beer called Plank. And Plank leveraged yellow poplar. Now, what's interesting about Plank is if you were to take yellow poplar, which looks like this, not like that. This is what yellow poplar looks like. And you were to dunk this in your beer and age it for a while, you're not going to get much flavor out of it. You're going to get a bunch of astringency and not much else, okay? But what Heavy Seas did is they leveraged a new thermal treatment to turn this benign wood into a flavor powerhouse. And in addition to being, as far as I could tell, the first to leverage yellow poplar, they were the first to use a retification technique to modify the wood before it went into the beer. And we'll talk about retification a little bit later. I guess the point is that there have been many, many wood-aged beers that have hit the market over the last several years. I just pulled out three to me that represent important firsts. And all of these collectively demonstrate that wood aging should not be limited just to oak. Now, estimates today are that there's over 100,000 species of wood on this planet. Now, some of them would kill you, so you don't want to use those. But with over 100,000 wood species on this planet, let's say there's 6 wood species that are all traded as white oak that are being used in alcoholic beverages today. And in addition to that, I could probably count on my hands the number of other species that have been tested commercially in beverages. That leaves a whole lot of research left to be done. And then when you take into account all of these species of wood times all the different beer styles, times all the different preparations that you can do with this wood, I think we could suffice it to say these are uncharted waters. There's a lot more experimentation, there's a lot more that we could be doing in order to see what we can develop that has not yet been done in the world of wood and beer. So, in order to start tinkering around safely, the first thing that you need to do is get a good understanding of wood anatomy. Now, that's not just as simple as knowing that a tree contains heartwood, sapwood, cambium, phloem, and bark. I mean, the whole point here is you want to be able to pick up a piece of wood, and when you hold that piece of wood in your hand, you want to know, are you holding just heartwood? Are you holding in your hand just sapwood or a fraction thereof. I think you're smart enough to figure out whether you're holding bark. I don't. But the image on the right-hand side of the screen, it was chosen because there's a clear demarcation between the heart and the sapwood. The heartwood is always in the center. It's not always darker, but it's usually darker. And the sapwood is always on the outside of a cross-section of a tree. So here's the heartwood, and here's the sapwood. Now, this particular piece of wood, you will never want to use in your beer. This is yew, Y-E-W, and it will kill you if you put it in your beer. So that's a little note to make, not to experiment with. Let's go over a few examples here of heartwood versus sapwood. In the upper left-hand corner, we have American black walnut. And we have some dark brown, and we have a little cream-colored streak through it. So is the dark brown heartwood or sapwood? What would you guess? Yeah, that is heartwood. And the light streak is indeed sapwood. Now the top middle, American cherry, we have some rusty colors in the left two rows, and then the third plank to the right is cream colored, so we have the rusty color is what, heartwood, right? And the light color is sapwood. There's also a little sliver of sapwood right up here, okay? The next one's a little harder. In white oak, when you're looking at lumber, it's kind of harder to tell. With white oak here, I'm just going to help you out. Most of this is heartwood, and there's a little sapwood streak right there. Down below, the lower left, does anybody have an idea how you can determine whether or not that, what parts are heartwood and what parts are sapwood in that one? It's a trick question. both the bottom left and the bottom right are sugar maple. But the lumber industry will commonly separate out and sell the sapwood apart from the heartwood. Similarly, you might have heard of red birch and yellow birch. Those are actually from the same tree. So understanding, doing some research on what you have, what species you're deciding to work with, and then understanding the anatomy of the wood, whether or not you're dealing with heartwood, sapwood, or bark, is a really, really good first step to making sure that A, you're going to be able to reproduce your results, B, that you're going to be operating safely. Let's talk about wood chemistry a little bit. If you were to take just about any type of wood and break it down into, let's say, three chemical categories, I'd break it down into carbohydrates, lignin, and organic extractives, okay? Carbohydrates, there's two general types of carbohydrates that you could find in any type of wood, cellulose and hemicellulose. Now, just like when you mash in, you break down the starches and the grain into simple sugars, the carbohydrates, cellulose and hemicellulose, can be digested into simple sugars with wood as well. Lignin, this is essentially the glue that holds everything together in a tree. Lignin, when that's digested, it chemically breaks down into organic extractives. And organic extractives is what we really care about as brewers. These are the things that really augment the flavor, aroma, and mouthfeel of our beer. So we really care about lignin, and we care even more about organic extractives. Tannins, you may or may not know, are an antioxidant. You throw more tannins into your beer, it will cellar better because it protects it against oxidization. Lactones that you get out of wood, those are the things that some people associate with the aroma or taste of fresh cut wood. Sometimes people associate certain lactones with the smell or flavor of coconut. Vanillin, you're all familiar with. There is a litany of other phenols and aldehydes that you can pull out of wood that's all dependent on the species or the treatment that's used to prepare the wood. And there are things that you can do to your wood. There are things that you can do to your wood to make it more rich with organic extractives. And we're going to get into those now. These are the wood treatments. The spirits and wine industry, they all season their wood before they make a barrel or develop staves for use in their product. Seasoning is basically air drying, but you'll notice that this is not done in a building. It's not done undercover. It's done outdoors, where all of nature's elements can get to it. And they do this on purpose because, first and foremost, Oxidization and microbial action break down that lignin into more organic extractives. So now you have a more extractive-rich wood product. You get more stuff into your beer that way. Secondly, the acid rain that falls down on this stuff literally rinses tannins off the wood. Tannins, while on one hand can be a good preservative for your beer, are also harsh, and they can lead to a lot of astringency in your beer. So by exposing it to the acid rain, tannins get washed away, and then when they go to use this wood, you have a lot of these rich phenols, aldehydes, soluble lipids that are available in the wood with slightly fewer tannins, and you end up with a nice, rounder, less astringent product. So seasoning or air drying is one wood treatment that can be done in order to tease more organic extractives out of that wood. Another method is pyrolysis. If we were to take pyrolysis and, translate that word from Latin into English, pyro means fire and lysis means cutting. So you're effectively using fire, or heat rather, to cut larger molecules into smaller molecules. There's two different types of pyrolysis that have been used in the beer industry that I'm aware of. The first, and most commonly known, as toasting. When you toast a piece of wood, what you're effectively doing is you're pyrolyzing the surface. Here is, in my left hand, yellow poplar that has not been toasted, and in my microphone hand, the right hand, you have yellow poplar that has been toasted. Okay? Now, the thing with toasting is that toasting just gets what I call the skin of the wood. If you look at the cross-section, okay, of both pieces, you can see that only the outer ring of the toasted sample actually has caramelized. All right? Now, this could be a good thing, because you get different flavors out of toasted wood than you do untoasted. So with this toasted sample, you're going to get some of the toasty flavors off the surface, and then as the beer penetrates the wood, you're going to get some of the other flavors that you would get from the untoasted wood. Now, reddification is a process that shares some similarities to toasting. Now in my left hand, I have a piece of reddified poplar, okay? And in my right hand, the microphone hand, I have a piece of toasted poplar. Now, they look similar, right? They're both dark brown. But when you look at the cross-section, you can see that the reddified sample is uniformly brown all the way through the core. This wood, the reddified wood, has been pyrolyzed 100%. Okay? This is the process that was used with heavy seas to turn yellow poplar, a benign wood, into a flavor powerhouse. We reddified the shit out of it. Reddification may work for you if you're looking for certain elements in your beer, and it may not work for you. It's not as easy to find reddified wood, but if you look in specialty lumber shops, you can pretty commonly find reddified poplar, cherry, maple, and every now and again you might find something exotic. Right here in Pennsylvania, I could think of three shops that do reddification. I mean, if you got lots of money, you could always get them to reddify whatever you want. But reddification is an interesting way of treating the wood, again, to tease out more organic extractives. Hydrolysis is another chemical process that can be used to tease out more organic extractives. Now, this is unlike pyrolysis and air drying. It's not done in isolation before you add the wood to the beer. Hydrolysis effectively happens already once you add the wood to the beer. Hydrolysis is the splitting of larger molecules by way of water, or in some cases acid, into smaller molecules. Hydrolysis will turn cellulose and hemicellulose into simple sugars, and it will break down certain lignins into phenols. Now, beer is full of water and already acid. So essentially, when you add any wood to your beer, this process of hydrolysis is occurring. It's good to know from the academic standpoint that this is part of what's happening with your product. Now, I have to say this to cover my ass. Don't age your beer on plywood. Okay? So let's get into some technical stuff here. Over the course of the last, 6 years, I've been tinkering around with a variety of different professionals. on how to use wood in beer. And one thing that we found is that those that have been accustomed to working with oak, they're probably used to weighing their oak before they put it in their beer, right? Well, weighing your wood is a very simple method of measuring the amount of wood you're going to be putting in your beer, but it doesn't really help you when you want to start experimenting across multiple species. Case in point, in my microphone hand, you have a piece of yellow poplar, and in my left hand, you have a piece of Palo Santo wood, and you could clearly see that one is larger than the other. This one is heavier. Okay? Woods have drastically different densities across species, and they also have different densities whether you're working with heartwood or sapwood. So I prefer, instead of weighing my wood, I prefer to quantify how much wood we're putting in beer by way of surface area. How much of the wood will be touched by the beer? And the upside is that you can gain knowledge from these experiments that can be transferred to work with other species. The downside is that it's a more complicated measure, but if you're reasonably handy with Excel, and if you remember anything from your algebra course, you can definitely simplify this. I've built myself a calculator in Excel to make this a no-brainer process of calculating not only how much I have in terms of surface area per gallon, but I've also built a reverse calculator where I put in, these are how many gallons of beer I'm making, this is the square inches that I want per gallon of beer, and I want all of my sticks to be 10 square inches of surface area each, and it tells me these are the dimensions you need to cut them up to. I recommend, if you want to tinker with other wood species, working with surface area as a way of measuring your wood. As far as how much to put into your beer, this is a very complicated question, and this is where you need to tinker quite a bit. Each species will be different. Each species offers a different range of extractives that can go into your beer. Whether your wood is treated or not treated thermally or through seasoning or some sort of acid treatment, you're going to get different results. You're going to need different quantities of wood. The cut of wood is critical. A tree is really a vertical bundle of tubes, right? And if you were to take that tree and you were to cut it this way, right? You were to do a cross section and look down on the stump, you'd be looking at a whole bunch of pores. If you had like magnifying eyes, you'd be looking at a whole bunch of pores because you're looking down into those tubes, right? If you were to look at the side of the stump, you'd be looking at the sides of those tubes. You would not be seeing any pores. When I'm looking at the top of that stump, I'm looking at what's called end grain. Okay? This piece of wood here, just these two short ends, just the short ends, are exposed end grain. And all these other sides, I'm looking at the sides of those tubes. This piece of wood is cut in a fashion that it's much less permeable than if it was cut this way and the end grain were on these big, long, broad sides. Okay? So it's, when you're experimenting with wood, you want to consider the orientation of the grain because you are going to get much more efficient extraction from this wood when you have greater end grain exposure. And more importantly, if you want to do a repeatable experiment, you want to remember how it was cut the first time. Otherwise, you might get results that surprise you the next time. ABV is also very important. Very simply, ethanol is a better solvent than water. And lastly, beer style is important. We've done experiments where we've looked at an 8%, let's say, IPA, and we've looked at an 8% stout. And using a certain type of wood, we might find that we want 12 square inches per gallon with the IPA, but 12 square inches per gallon with the stout might not work. You might need to dial it up. You might need to dial it back. So as far as concentration goes, this is where the most tinkering is required in order to find the best balance of wood in your beer. Time. The more time that you can dip your wood in it, the better. We have found that 4 weeks is the magic number. What happens in the first 3 weeks of beer, we've done experiments where we've put wood in a corny keg, right? And we start to let it age, and then we just draw off small samples as the beer is aging. The first week, tastes okay, but it's a little one-dimensional. And as you get into week two and week three, it tastes more and more like shit. And it's because lots and lots of tannins are coming out of the wood into the beer, and it's becoming very harsh and very, very astringent. And then just as you think that you're going to have to dump this stuff out, for some reason, right around week four, all of a sudden it starts tasting amazing. What's happening is, around week four, given the temperatures that you're normally holding your beer at, and given the acid environment of the beer itself, the tannins are starting to crystallize and precipitate out of solution. That starts to happen at week four, and more tannins continue to fall out of solution as the beer continues to age on the wood. For that reason, I recommend not wood aging your beer for any less than 4 weeks at all. But really, I think 6 weeks is where you start getting into the sweet spot. 6 to 8 weeks. Now, you can leave your beer on the wood for a year, 2 years if you want. I mean, you always run the risk of spoilage if you're messing with it. But definitely no less than four. And definitely 6 to 8 weeks, you start to get into the sweet spot. As far as temperature goes, the experiments that we've conducted, we found that temperature really doesn't seem to affect the efficiency of extraction. We haven't done any like liquid chromatography analyses or anything here when it comes to temperature, but we have done sensory analyses, and we have perceived slightly better extraction at ale temperatures rather than at lager temperatures, but that could just be psychological. Bottom line is, haven't found over time any real effect of temperature on wood extraction. Now, there's many different wood formats that you can use when wood aging your beer. You can get extract, chips, cubes, honeycombs, spirals, staves or planks. I prefer staves and planks for multiple reasons. Number one, you're going to have a hard time finding weird wood species in any other format. Number two, I really find that you get the best value out of staves and planks, and I've tried to demonstrate that here. Extract at a retail level for a 4-ounce bottle is about $5.25. This is all done for oak. $5.25, the manufacturer says each bottle treats 13.3 gallons, and that breaks down to a cost per gallon of 39 cents. Okay? I labeled quality complexity as low because, in my experience, I feel like extract gives you more of a one-dimensional flavor. It does certainly contribute a woody flavor, but it's a little more one-dimensional, and my guess is that you're losing some volatiles in the process of making the extract. Chips, by comparison, breaks down to a cost per gallon of 5 cents. I labeled that as medium quality, and that's because chips are very thin. And when you have something very thin like that, the volatile organic extractives will literally evaporate out of the wood product before you can get it into your beer. Okay? Cubes, spirals, and staves all have sufficient thickness, in my opinion, where you have the opportunity through liquid permeation to extract some of those volatile organics into your beer product. The big difference between cubes, spirals, and staves is the cost. One board foot will treat, based on 16 square inches per gallon, which I think is very rich. I wanted to be as conservative as I could here. One board foot will cost you 3 cents per gallon to dose your beer. Now, that assumes that you own a bandsaw and you're taking time to cut up the wood, but that's a 4,000% difference from the cost of spirals. Now, if you're a homebrew and you're doing a 5-gallon batch, it might make sense to go with the spirals. They're very easy to work with. But if you're getting into larger quantities, especially if you're getting up to production levels, a 4,000% price difference really begins to affect your bottom line. Bandsaw, if you want to start tinkering around with other wood species, this is one of the best investments you can make. First and foremost, it's one of the safest ways that you can cut up wood without risk of losing a thumb. Number two, bandsaw has a very thin blade. So if you were to take a 12-inch by 12-inch square of wood and cut it up into so many pieces with a thick blade, you're going to end up with a very large pile of sawdust on the floor. With a very thin blade, you end up with a very small pile of sawdust. You get more bang for your buck when you use the bandsaw. And most importantly, the bandsaw, if you're anal like me, can help you make very precise cuts so you know exactly how much surface area you have on each piece of wood when you're done. Okay? I've made my case on the bandsaw and on the staves. Not all wood is safe. I feel like safety is sometimes underrated when it comes to this stuff. I really, really do. Some species of wood, you can touch it, you get a rash. Some species of wood, you inhale it, you can get lung cancer. Some species of wood can kill you. So we probably don't want to use some of those in our beer. It's very important to research what you're working with before you start working with it. And not just knowing what it's going to do in the beer, but knowing what it's going to do while you're physically handling it. I suggest when you're considering working with a given species of wood, considering taxonomy, anatomy, moisture content, preservatives, and exposure. And we're going to get into that real quick. Taxonomy, always, always make sure you've identified the wood by proper Latin name. There are species of wood on many, many continents that are traded as cherry. There are over 24 different species of wood on this planet that are traded as cherry. So if somebody says, this is cherry wood, you have no idea what you're working with. Okay? And if somebody tells you that this particular cherry is Prunus serratina, American black cherry, Prunus serratina, you might start to do a little research and you might learn that if livestock eat the leaves or bark of this tree, they die. And that might concern you, and it should. Thing is that livestock have different chemistry in their GI tract than we do. And Prunus serratina contains what are known as cyanogenic compounds. When these animals ingest this and it reacts with their gut, it literally turns into cyanide in their gut, and that's what kills them. Our GI tract, human beings, it doesn't turn into cyanide. So that's good, okay? You might do a little more research, and you might find that Prunus serratina is used by some balsamic vinegar producers to make casks so they can age their vinegar in them. You might also learn that there are cutting boards and utensils and salad bowls made out of Prunus serratina, sold right here in the United States. Maybe you start to feel a little bit more comfortable. And then you realize that there is Prunus serratina being sold as wood chips to smoke your food on. Okay? And you start to feel a little bit more comfortable. And then you notice that with your casks and with your wood chips and with your salad bowls, that it's almost always pure heartwood that's being used, not the sapwood, not the bark, when making these things. And accordingly, when considering to use Prunus serratina in your beer, you might want to consider selecting pure heartwood and not pieces of lumber that have sap or bark, just to be on the safe side. Okay? Moisture content isn't really a matter of killing people. It's more a matter of if you want to produce an uninfected beer, moist wood serves as a growth medium for microorganisms. You can get sometimes in the lumber industry green lumber, which means it hasn't been even air dried. Okay? That's going to pose the biggest risk for you in terms of contamination. Air dried lumber, depending on how long it's been air dried, can still pose an infection risk. If you really want to play it safe and do an uninfected beer, I recommend going with a kiln-dried lumber. Most timber products that you'll get at a retail level have been kiln-dried, and you could always ask your supplier if they've been kiln-dried or not. Preservatives, we already really went over. This is don't take creosote-soaked railroad ties and throw them in your beer. This is pretty much a no-brainer, but gotta say that. And then lastly, exposure. Even with working with oak, I've spent, you know, a half day cutting up oak for a batch of beer, and I did it one time without a mask, and I was coughing for 3 days after, you know? You don't get a rash handling oak, but any type of sawdust, I always, always recommend wearing a mask. And there are other species of wood. You can handle the rough lumber just fine, but when the sawdust gets on your skin, you'll get a rash. And this link down here goes to a pretty cool article that a guy wrote one time. It lists off, I don't know, a few dozen commonly traded species of wood, and then it's got columns. Contact dermatitis, yes or no. Respiratory issues, yes or no. Causes cancer, yes or no. Causes death, yes or no. So that's a good resource in terms of determining how and when you might want to select a species of wood to use in your beer. I cannot understate the value of safety when tinkering with wood. There's a lot of unexplored water out there, uncharted waters, if you will, and I hope that maybe this talk has motivated some of you to start tinkering around with some stuff. I do have a list that I've amassed of species never to use. If any of you guys want it, I could send it out via email. And I do have that calculator that I've built for quantifying surface area. So if any of you guys are interested in that, let me know and I could email it to you. But this is essentially my presentation, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much.